Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday, September the 4th, 2026. 17 and a half minutes past the hour, and we are getting ready to kick off your Labor Day weekend, long weekend coming up this weekend. The official end of summer, they call it, but are we ready for that? I don't know. We'll see as time goes along. Joined in studio this morning, I want to get right to our first guest. He is here live in the studio for the first 2 hours this morning, and we are very happy of that because there is a governor's race coming up now, I believe 60 days from today, or 59, however you count, want to count it at this particular point, between Vivek Ramaswamy, the Republican candidate for governor, and Amy Acton, the Democratic candidate for governor. But there is another candidate who will be on the ballot. He is the Libertarian candidate for governor. He is Don Kissick, and this morning he is live in the studio with us for the first 2 hours of the program. Don, so glad you could come over early on a Friday, Labor Day weekend, getting ready to kick it off.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Don, tell people a little bit about yourself.
Oh, boy. It's interesting and boring at the same time. I moved to Ohio in 2007 with my first wife, whom I lost to cancer in 2013. Then later that year, I met Sarah, and we've been married for, you know, it's funny, tomorrow will be our 12th anniversary, in fact. So I don't know if she's hearing me, but Sarah, happy anniversary. I love you. And yeah, in the middle of all, you know, all that going on, I was looking for a better economic opportunity down here. I moved here from that state up north, and I'm so much happier here, by the way. It's one of the best decisions I made in my life. But in the process of trying to find better economic opportunity, eventually I landed on a job at Honda. My first wife diagnosed with leukemia during all that time, and I know in 2009 I was still working as a temp there. That's when the recession hit. We went from not being able to build cars fast enough because of the gas price of gas getting up to $4 a gallon. Then when the recession hit, but because the recession hit in the banking sector, which was like a first of its kind, at least in my lifetime, no one could get financing. So all these people who were craving Accords and Civics for the gas mileage all of a sudden couldn't get the financing to buy these cars. So we went from turning and burning to suddenly we couldn't pump the brakes hard enough. Eventually they let go of the vast majority of their temps. I got swept up in that. And it made me really rethink everything. I used to see the world through very conservative lenses. And after the 2000 election, I thought, well, with the results of that election, we're going to see conservative values and principles really, you know, put in motion. And no, we didn't. And that was frustrating, because when you see the world a certain way for that much of your life, and then you have to rethink everything, how you thought every principle, how the different camps would handle things, it creates a little bit of stress. And in all of that, that's when I started looking into other options and landed on the Libertarian Party.
Now, is a libertarian, you say you were more of a conservative prior
yes.
to this.
Yes.
Is a libertarian closer to a conservative or a progressive?
Well, really neither, because the thing is, even conservatism nowadays is just better described as right-wing progressivism. They talk a good game of economic freedom, but the problem is they're all too willing to look for laws to control your personal life. Which, in libertarian terms, that's every bit as, you know, statist and completely against our worldview as trying to control how people do business.
Let's run through some big issues for people here. Abortion.
Okay. Oh, we're going to go right into the wedge issues. Great.
The wedge ones.
Yes. Everyone hates my stance on abortion because I don't have a hardline position one direction or the other. if you're pro-choice, you don't like me because I've no problem saying that I believe that life begins at conception. So I think abortion in and of itself is pretty horrible. The thing is, I understand, though, that, and this is where the pro-life people are not going to like me, because I understand that prohibition does not work. And because the problem with any kind of ban, prohibition on something, let's say, such as abortion, you will end up with unintended consequences, and all too often the unintended consequences outweigh the original problem that people want dealt with. And if you're talking about something that we can, that most of us can agree is awful, like abortion, why would you, that's not a risk worth taking in my book.
Gun control.
Oh, I'm absolutely opposed to gun control. I am 100% of the firm belief that shall not be infringed means exactly what it says when they wrote it over 250 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, it's kind of interesting because it would sound like the stance on abortion would be closer to the Democratic stance, and the stance on gun control certainly would be closer to the conservative stance. But it is the libertarian stance.
It's, you know, the best way to look at it, if you're looking at it from, you know, conservative or liberal or progressive, you know, terms, we can be thought of as small government moderates. We want less government, but we want less government in as many aspects of life and society as possible. We believe that you're an adult and you should be treated as such, at least as far as the government goes. Anything beyond that is just, it's control. Controlling people doesn't make their life better. It just, if anything, it creates resent, which then leads to what Ron Paul has described as blowback then. And the blowback is where you get the real issues in society. If you believe in your values strongly enough, then it's on you and me as individuals to live our lives in such a way that it demonstrates the value of our values. We don't have to force it, because then that's not, you're not really helping people. You're just, like I said, you're turning them into prisoners in their own life.
Same-sex marriage.
I am all in favor of it. I don't believe the government should even be in the marriage business in the first place. But as long as we have state issuance of marital certificates, then they need to be available equally.
Marijuana.
I say fully legalize it in the same manner as alcohol and tobacco. I mean, if nothing else, the people of Ohio voted on this already, and they voted overwhelmingly in favor of legalization. And I am thoroughly opposed to the way the Republican-controlled General Assembly decided the people really didn't know what they were voting on, which is a lie. Flat out. I'm going to call them liars. There's no other way to frame it. Because, again, you're an adult. You should be treated as such. Marijuana demonstrably is less harmful than alcohol or tobacco, but somehow we're supposed to be afraid of it. And it goes back to the Nixon administration. If you understand that Richard Nixon was a very corrupt individual, I don't understand why anyone would want to perpetuate one of his signature legislation from his presidency.
Let's talk about the other two candidates, get your thoughts on them, and then go to the big story this week in the campaign for governor. Vivek Ramaswamy, what do you make of him?
I hate to regurgitate other people's talking points, but the word grifter, I think, applies to him. If you look into, you know, the pump and dump he did when they had their stake in Roivant, his family did, that tells you everything you need to know about his character and just how he approaches any opportunity to make a buck, especially if it's at someone else's expense.
You know, it's interesting because we will have a first in this election, possibly have a first, unless you win, Don. But Vivek is a non-white, non-Christian candidate. Do you think that plays in with the Republican Party? Because usually, a lot of people would say in Ohio that even if Republicans don't like their candidate, they do line up at the end of the day, i.e. a Max Miller this time.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of talk about this. I don't doubt that some people are going to be influenced by these aspects of Mr. Ramaswamy. I'm not focusing on that. I don't want to even talk about it because, to me, that's not relevant. I don't care. You know, I don't care about ethnicity. I do not care about what religion they practice. I am a non-denominational Christian myself, But the thing is, but going back to what I said earlier, if I believe in my own values, that means, especially if you take the time to read the scripture, that means it's my responsibility as an individual to live my life in a way that shows there's value in living that way. If I can't do that, then I have no business trying to control what other people do if I'm not living up to it. These are the very hypocrites that the Son of God himself called out in the Gospels.
Do you think in places where conservatives need to win, Southern Ohio, the more rural communities in Ohio, that race will matter?
If it does, it's a shame. Again, that's that. I have no desire to focus on that. Like I said, I'm not even comfortable talking about it right now because, as I said, it doesn't matter. I mean, in 2000, I was all in for Alan Keyes in the 2000 Republican primary. I felt he was the best person for that job, and I didn't care. I didn't not care about his skin tone or anything like that. I just wanted someone who espoused principles and a plan of action that matched how I saw things.
Amy Acton.
She's a career bureaucrat with a PhD, and she's such a mixed bag. I could have gone on and on about the ways that Ramaswamy has flip-flopped on a number of key issues, and it's been wild in the last several weeks to watch Dr. Acton one by one throw just about every marginalized population under the bus, between LGBT, black voters with her vocal support of maintaining qualified immunity, and throwing immigrants under the bus by saying she believes that state and local authorities should assist federal immigration officials. No, I mean, let the feds do their own dirty work. And the thing is, she specifically went after the transgender community. Now, here's some interesting numbers that people aren't talking about enough. In the preceding 7 years before that bill was passed, there had been a grand total of 8 transgender athletes in all of Ohio. And in that 7-year span, you're talking about a grand total of roughly 400,000 student athletes. This is not an issue. This is a boogeyman that first conservatives started to generate, and to see her, try to sound more Republican, to me, is kind of outlandish. Why go out of her way to make people who are already feeling marginalized feel even worse about the situation? I mean, it's cruel and unnecessary.
Well, I think one reason people would say is because, even though, as you say, there have only been 8 cases of it in a certain number of years before now, for some reason, this issue being used by the Republicans more than the Democrats, against the Democrats, has become bigger than abortion, has become bigger than marijuana usage, has become bigger than gun control. For some reason, this comes up more often, to the point where she gets asked about this when she is out campaigning.
Because we're talking about a population that is extremely small and very misunderstood. I understand that this is not going to make me very popular amongst more conservative voters, but I'm going to stand by my principles. If you want to trust me to stay true on the big issues like data centers and flock cameras and ending property tax in Ohio, the best way I can justify your trust on those top issues is by not betraying any of the voters who have given me their trust on any of the other issues in this campaign. Like I said, the transgender population, it's very misunderstood. They're very small, which just makes them an easy target. And that's why conservatives decide to key in on them, because there are one or two stories that somehow got overblown, and now they're trying to convince you that that anyone who identifies as another gender somehow is going to be the ruin of society. No, they won't be. Even if I'm wrong about being transgender, still. Again, it's our responsibility as individuals then to live our lives in such a way that if we are on the right side of things, the happiness and the positivity in our lives then will shine through. And that's how we can convince, you know, anyone that, you know, we're on the right side of any topic. If you're not willing to do that, if your only, you know, concern is legislation, are you on the right side of this thing? Because you don't need to control people in order to convince them of, you know, right from right and wrong from wrong.
How do you feel about the issue of transgender athletes?
I'm not opposed to it. Here's the thing. I know there's a lot of discussion about this, but all too often they don't really dominate the way people are afraid they're going to. There was that one case with Leah Thomas, but it's not like, you know, this individual won, you know, the entire national championship of swimming. They did very well in one race, and that was it. I mean, the rest of the competitions for the NCAA that year, they were pretty average. They just had one strong performance, but that's all it took to suddenly raise alarms that didn't need to be raised.
But this really gets under people's skin. I mean, holy moly.
I know, we're talking about right now, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, we've taken calls on this, and I'm shocked that during the last presidential election, where it also became a big issue, the adamant nature that how people feel about this. I mean, they are one way or they are the other, and it's a big issue for them, and it doesn't matter how many people are participating. It's just it's a big issue.
Which I don't understand. Like I said, they are such a small part of the population. They're a minority within a minority. I mean, the people make estimates about how much of the population is LGBT. The more conservative people will assert it's only 1%. The more progressive someone is, they're inclined to say something like 10%. I'm of the mindset that the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. The LGBT population is probably 5% of our society. And then transgender is a very tiny minority within that minority. They're not a threat. That's the part that I don't get. If you really look at the numbers, if you look at the fact that the vast majority of them, just these individuals, just want to live life without being bothered. If that is too much for you, I don't know what to tell you, because yes, it's always easy to look at a handful of activists, but you could say that about any cause and any movement. And if you want to fixate on the ones that just seem to have the most outlandish behavior or say the most outlandish things, have the most outlandish rhetoric, oh, I mean, we could portray anyone with that kind of brushstroke. I mean, it's an extremely unfair way to go about this. If you're a Christian conservative, do you want to be, you know, you want to be held up to the same standard that people view, try the name of the church out in Missouri, if you know what I'm talking about, the ones that were saying, thank God for dead soldiers, that, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I can't remember the name. Of course, I'm trying to talk about it, and the name's escaping. But, I mean, if you understand that's the wrong way to view anyone who's Christian conservative, then maybe have that same understanding with any other population out there.
We've never had a female elected governor. This would be a first as well. Will being a woman hurt Dr. Acton?
I don't really believe it should. It could. I think, again, depending on how traditionalist someone wants to be, it's not about, you know, her sex. It's about, can you trust her to follow through on any of her promises? She's already flip-flopped on a lot of the, you know, more progressive social issues. And when I was here Wednesday for the video podcast, I mean, I was saying it then, and I'm still going to keep saying it. My concern with how she's been campaigning and how she's been changing her stance on issues is that if she's elected, she'll be little more than an empty suit. She's just going to lean on, you know, advisors. She's going to lean on lobbyists to tell her what she should think and how she should approach any legislation. And that's not good for anyone. Whether they're Republican or Democrat or any other party affiliation or non-affiliation, you want someone that knows where they stand and they are consistent on it.
Now, the big news this week, this was on Wednesday, this became a big story in the governor's race. September 2nd, a press release was issued first by Vivek Ramaswamy's team. Here's what it was. Vivek Ramaswamy has formally agreed to participate in debates against his Democrat gubernatorial opponent, Amy Acton. His campaign recently received two debate invitations from CNN and WLWT, a local NBC News affiliate in Ohio. Vivek has accepted both invitations. Ohioans deserve a substantive debate between their two candidates for governor. I challenge Amy Acton to join me on the debate stage so voters can make a well-informed choice in November, said Ramaswamy. To support broad public access, WLWT would make the debate available via satellite at no cost to all media outlets in Ohio, including television and radio stations, as well as newspapers. It would also be streamed on WLWT.com and WLWT's streaming platform, Very Local. The Ramaswamy campaign is awaiting word if Dr. Acton plans to participate. They didn't have to wait long. Within a couple hours, the Acton campaign had released a statement, and this is what it was. Dr. Acton's focus is on talking with Ohioans, not participating, platforming a scam artist who spreads baseless lies about her family and herself. She uses AI to falsely paint her as someone with a substance abuse problem and shames Dr. Acton for being sexually abused as a child while Vivek stands with predators and abusers. Ramaswamy and his billionaire buddies have spent more than $50 million on disgusting, inaccurate attack ads that have been condemned as the most vile and repulsive lies Ohio has ever seen, said Acton campaign manager Phil Stein. So that's how that story goes. What do you make of it, Don?
It's a lot of show. I mean, here's what's funny. I crossed paths with Mr. Ramaswamy at the Teamsters dinner a couple weeks back, August 18th to be specific, and I had a chance to shake his hand. And at first he got me to think that he knew who I was because he called me my name, because I forgot I had the ridiculous name tag on my outfit. And so we were shaking hands, we're talking, and then I had to inform him I'm Don Kisk, I'm the Libertarian candidate for governor. I'm one of your opponents. And I challenged him to a debate right there, and he agreed. I mean, he was a little bit fuzzy on his wording. Just we got to get the third candidate, which was, you know, an obvious tongue-in-cheek swipe at Dr. Acton. But I mean, for him to now pretend that conversation didn't happen is extremely dishonest. And again, it just doesn't help him with his grifter image that's he being painted as.
Now we have that. So let's play that for the audience. Okay. Now, it's going to be a little hard to hear because it was a video, but after this plays, we'll come back to Don here, and he can kind of tell us what happened. But here's the audio from that meeting, and I believe the date on this is August 19th. Here we go.
So why don't we debate?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Just get the third candidate out. And that might be a little trickier.
Oh, I know. That might be a little trickier. I like good discussion. What's your name?
Christopher, running for State House District 82.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So you won't debate without a third person?
Good to see you.
Typical.
What's that?
I said, typical.
I know. What was his response? You didn't catch
it. He didn't say anything.
Oh.
Okay, he says, just get the third person. Okay.
Yes.
So what happened there, Don?
Oh, it just, he was shaking hands all around. I positioned myself to be, you know, the next person he crossed paths with. The gentleman named Christopher that was there with me, Christopher Elder, he is running for state rep as a Libertarian over in the 82nd District. He's the one who took the video, and he was trying to shake hands with him because, I mean, it was all candidates there. I mean, everyone there was either a candidate or, like, their significant other or part of their campaign team. And I think he was more interested in having longer conversations with either someone who could donate to him or a fellow Republican that could, you know, help his campaign in some way. I think when he saw that he was being recorded and I'm shaking his hand, telling him who I was, he gave me a little bit more time than he gave Christopher. He couldn't blow Christopher off quickly enough.
So now your assertion in that video is what?
He made the agreement.
If you get the third candidate, though, isn't that what he said? Just to be fair.
Sure. But the thing is, I think at that time he assumed that, you know, any debate was going to be between the two of them, and this was my way of trying to make that inroads to say, all right, I've got an agreement from at least one of the major party candidates. You know, there's no reason to exclude me. But it's kind of funny that they went through WLWT and they went through CNN. Spectrum One News had already reached out to all the campaigns. They sent an invite to those two, and they sent one to mine at the same time. And We replied very promptly. We will do it. We just, you know, give us a date so we can make sure everything's arranged for us to be there. I was in contact with Tammy's Brito, who is their political director. She said that the deadline to agree had already passed, and that she heard no word from either the Ramaswamy or acting campaigns.
Well, there's a couple points I want to make. One in the fairness of transparency. We have also done that here at the station. Okay. We do a candidates night, and your campaign has responded that you would participate. So there's that. Mm-hmm. The other two yet, we haven't heard from. So we'll see what happens. We haven't hit our deadline yet, so we'll see what happens because our candidates night, which we've been doing around here for quite a while, doesn't happen till October. So that's one thing, just in the fairness of transparency. And number two, yesterday on this program, former Governor Celeste was on, and we were talking about this issue. And he said he had no inside information or anything of that nature, but he said before Election Day, and this is a paraphrase, but the interview's on the website.
Okay.
Before Election Day, he feels that voters will get to see these two on stage, but he would not say what that was or why he believes that. Kind of cryptic in a way, but especially after the turn down here. But then I thought about this, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Now, CNN, I think, I'm going to go out on a limb here, is probably the most down-the-road cable news network when you compare it with Fox and you compare it with MS Now. But recently, CNN was acquired by another company, and is now, I believe, Barry Weiss is also being put in charge of CNN at this point, or may already be in charge.
Interesting.
So maybe that's why CNN was one of the debate picks by Ramaswamy. WLWT, I don't know. I mean, I don't live in the Cleveland area.
That's so, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Excuse me, Cincinnati. So I'm not sure. That's right. WLW is in Cleveland. WLWT. I'm not sure. I don't know why this station was chosen out of all of them.
Probably just proximity, because I mean, he always brags about being from the Cincinnati area, and of the three C major cities in Ohio, Cincinnati has probably the most conservative leaning population that of all the three metropolitan areas. So, more than likely, they probably made some contacts. I thought that's my supposition. I don't know for certain, but that's what makes the most sense.
Well, if it is because these are the conservative stations, which again, I'm not saying that they are, but if that's the reason that Amy Acton doesn't want to do this, we're open to it. Obviously, you have said Spectrum is open to it.
Oh, yes.
There have been other requests sent to all campaigns. So, we'll see what happens.
Oh, I agree. But it's interesting that they won't talk about Spectrum. They were all invited to it. They broadcast statewide. This is on cable. Anyone who has cable if you have Spectrum cable, you have Spectrum One News on your lineup. That's a big audience that they're choosing not to reach. But they really don't need that. I guess from a campaign finance standpoint. Between the Victory PAC and other PACs that are spending tens of millions of dollars on these ads, the kind of ads that Dr. Acton is talking about, and the massive war chest that Vivek has, he doesn't need any free publicity. He can buy all the publicity he wants. Obviously, we are not in the same boat. Dr. Acton, they brought in almost as much as just one campaign spent by one of the, I think it was VPAC, the amount they spent actually dwarfs Dr. Acton's total haul right now. That's what I caught in the news recently. And so she's going to, that's why I'm kind of surprised that she's not taking advantage of a chance to debate, because it costs her nothing to do that.
Well, it's interesting because her response is fascinating for a lot of people. And I believe former Attorney General Dave Yost even commented on this mm-hmm. morning and said that if indeed Vivek Ramaswamy is painting you as all these negative things, wouldn't it be good to take the platform to say these are false?
No, I know, and that's the thing that's one of the things that has me scratching my head, because this is her chance to really create a strong impression with the voters, just to get on that stage and then say, hey. With all this, whether it's been your campaign directly or the PACs that are supporting you, but you've not spoken out against this. Look me in the eye and then say you believe these things. Look me in the eye and say what your thoughts are about me. I mean, she could, if for all this, the Star Wars super nerds out there, she had a chance to present herself as Ohio's Leia Organa. Instead, we got Dedra Miro.
The ads. Obviously, more Ramaswamy ads out there.
Yes.
How do you feel about these ads? Because most people feel these are very vicious ads.
They're distasteful. I mean, that's my term for it. How does he know what's going on in her own home? Recently I've been comparing this to the Swift Boat ads from the 2004 presidential election. They come to find out a lot of the people that kept saying that Senator Kerry, didn't actually earn all these accolades and recognitions, military recognitions. None of them were involved with the Swift Boat operations that he was doing, so they had no way of knowing what the nature of his service was. Now, I did not vote for John Kerry. I thought he was just every bit as a bad candidate as George W. Bush, but I'm not going to line up with that. And it's been, I could take up a lot of your broadcast just talking about this. It's weird the way conservatives in election time, they really flip-flop about how important military service is. I mean, they couldn't say enough about, say, George H.W. Bush in 1988 when he was running. They used old footage of him flying Corsairs, Navy Corsairs, back in World War II. And then they were all aghast when someone questions Dan Quayle serving in the National Guard during Vietnam. Then 4 years later, they couldn't say enough terrible things about Clinton with taking deferments. Meanwhile, the same Democrats who said that this wasn't necessary, all of a sudden were like, these are the same ones that took Quayle to task. And then years later, they're trying to trumpet John Kerry's service. He went to Vietnam, and to me, that says enough about, what kind of person he is. I don't like the way he flip-flopped on war. He went from being very anti-war to suddenly, being a war hawk with the Obama administration, which I just don't get. But then in 2008 and 2012, you had Ron Paul, who served in Vietnam. He was there. No one can deny that. They just never talked. They just never brought it up. And I want to kind of cycle back to, the acting. As like I said, but when they're criticizing her for things that there's no way they can know for certain, and they have nothing but innuendo, they've been trumpeting, supposedly her mom said that the abuse was never like that. Well, abusers tend to lie about the nature of their abuse, so, who's telling the truth in that situation? She said, this is something they should not have tackled at all, and shame on them for that. Like I said, it speaks to their character, in this election, big time.
Want to talk about flock cameras, because this is a big issue here in Marion, and I'll speak on that in just a second. But we did get a message this morning that Columbus is pausing and bagging flock cameras. It was reported that one law enforcement officer searched 277 times for one license plate. Now, that comes from one of our listeners this morning. Now, here in Marion, we've had a big kerfluffle with this the last few weeks. Our city council voted 5-4 to get rid of the 22 flock cameras in the city. The mayor, who is a former police chief and deputy sheriff, vetoed that legislation. You have to get 6 votes to overturn the veto, and in the process of getting rid of the veto, which you need 6 votes to do, as I said, they lost a vote. So the veto vote ended up being 4-4.
Okay.
So this is what's happened here in Marion. The flock cameras will stay. Now, this coming Tuesday, I believe the day after Labor Day, there's going to be a meeting at City Hall in which they talk about flock restraints and oversight in legislation and codes. But that's the story here in Marion, which got a lot of attention. What do you make of flock cameras in general?
In general, I understand the potential benefits that people have been touting, but the problem is, when the when the potential pitfalls outweigh that, they have to go. Policing doesn't stop just because you can't get a hold of the latest technology. As we're finding out, these things are easily abused. I think even if you put guardrails in, what's going to happen is the people who are supposed to be watching that then are in a position to engage in the exact same abuses. It's going to be a never-ending cycle. You may take it out of the opportunity for abuse may be pulled out of the hands of the everyday police officers, but there's still a matter of who watches the watchers. That's always going to be the big question. So, and where does that data go? And how accessible is it? There are so many Fourth Amendment implications on this that I just say we need to get rid of them for public sector use. I know Lowe's has a reputation for putting them all over their parking lots. That's the private sector. That's a private business. Unless it can be demonstrated they're actively misusing, that kind of information that they're gaining. But then again, that's a matter for the civil courts. I think not necessarily for criminal courts. Of course, exceptions do apply in that matter. But I do not like the idea of any public agency, employing them. They are, like I said, the potential for abuse is too strong. I know as if elected governor, I would definitely direct the Ohio Department of Public Safety to decommission them right away. As far as the individual jurisdictions, I have no desire to strong arm them. I would push the General Assembly to have clear, concise rules and guardrails put in place to make it, it's easier then to recognize when there's abuse and bring the people who do that swiftly to justice. That's a great deterrent.
53 minutes past the hour this morning, Don Kissick, the Libertarian candidate for governor, is our guest. By the way, if you have a question, we may be able to get to it. Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944, so you can give it a try, and if we have time, we will try to get the question to Don here. 740-383-9944. For people who say libertarians can't win, third parties can't win, you're throwing away your vote, you say.
Well, we can't win. Not with that attitude, we can't. I mean, ultimately, if everyone who said that, that I would vote third party if they all just said, took a deep breath and filled in my circle on their ballot, we would win. I honestly believe that. We've got libertarians elected in Ohio right now. We have two mayors, in fact. Steve Salander up in Oregon. We have Cassandra Fryman over in Plymouth. She is running a very strong campaign, in fact, for Huron County Commissioner this year. I'm really eager to see how that one plays out. About as eager as I am to see how the governor's race plays.
What is a libertarian? If you had to describe it, you would say?
Maximum freedom, minimum government. We are small government moderates. We want to take over the government and leave you alone. That's the best way to summarize it.
Yeah. Why do you think these two candidates, Vivek Ramaswamy, Amy Acton, neither has ever been elected to a political office, are running for the top office in Ohio? Meaning to say, how did we get these two candidates? Either would be a first if they were elected. First elected female governor, first elected non-white governor. How did we end up with these two that people feel are so unlikable?
The Ohio Republican Party decided to endorse Vivek before they even had a chance to really see how the field of candidates for governor would shape up. The biggest front runner at that time was Dave Yost, and I don't know. I mean, he's the guy that's been in government forever. It seems like. I mean, I can't remember when was the last time he actually held a job where he had to punch a clock. That's what I would like to know. Anyhow, he was considered a front runner. There were other potential candidates that were looking at it, but when Trump anointed him as his favorite, and then when the Ohio Republican Party decided to endorse him before they'd even had their first internal debates to see who should be their nominee, people just feel like he's being rammed down their throats. It's a natural response. And Amy, Dr. Acton, no one else wanted to step up on the Democrat side. People started urging her, and it's in similar fashion to how I was being urged by other libertarians to make this run. And no one else stepped up. That's part. I mean, it's almost like she kind of stumbled into this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it could make for a good story, but a lot of people aren't buying it. A lot of people still remember what life was like during the pandemic. And I know everyone's trying to say who had what role in determining, you know, how to lock down Ohio, whether DeWine had the final say, how much of her input was there, but she had input. I mean, at any time, she could have stepped up and said, I think this goes too far. I think this was done wrong. She hasn't retracted anything. And I personally know people who lost their business because they you know, without the ability to actually generate revenue, you're going to lose everything. And a lot of people lost everything as a result. And they haven't forgotten that, and they're not going to forget it come the election.
Our governor right now, ending his 8 years in office come January, Governor DeWine, has taken some very interesting stances as of recent times. You know, it's very interesting when I think about Governor DeWine. Here's a guy who has never executed anybody in his 8 years as governor. He's put a moratorium on that, and now he's become the first governor of Ohio to actively call on the legislature to abolish the death penalty. He has defended the Haitians living in Springfield. He has said legalizing sports gambling was the worst decision of his tenure as governor. He did participate in making the decisions. I guess he had the final decision during the COVID-19 pandemic, and has defended those decisions when Ramaswamy, from his own party, has attacked Amy Acton. He has not always been in lockstep with Trump candidates here in Ohio. What do you make of Governor DeWine?
Oh gosh, how much time do we have to discuss that? He's, like I've said before, he's a mixed bag as a governor. There, I mean, his opposition to marijuana legalization and the fact that he supported trying to roll that back through legislation, I thought was, you know, a terrible thing. I mean, you talk about being tone deaf and not respecting the will of the people on that. He was completely in the wrong for the way he handled the lockdowns during the pandemic. I mean, his support of, you know, the Haitian immigrants, yeah, I'll throw him a bone on that one. I mean, I think he's right. These are people who are not committing crimes, and for, you know, and I mean, God, I could go on a full tangent on the situation with Pierre Damas Bell in Springfield, who took his own life.
20-year-old Wright State student.
Yeah, I mean, and he was going to, you know, ROTC as well. This was someone who was proud to be here, was looking to fully immerse himself in what it means to be American and pursue the American dream, and to fit him with an ankle monitor like he was a violent criminal. It's wrong. I mean, DeWine's on the right side of history on that one. I'm trying to think, that you gave quite a list there.
Abolish the death penalty.
Hey, even a broken clock is right twice a day. The problem is, we are finding more and more, we're learning of people who are on death row at different parts of the country who are actually innocent. They did not commit the crimes for which they're convicted and condemned to death. Thankfully, a lot of them have been exonerated before they were executed. Unfortunately, there have been too many after the fact exonerations. But when the risk is that high of getting it wrong, it's not the government's place to trade lives on these issues.
Right, wrong, or indifferent, he is standing behind his COVID decisions.
He's wrong. I'm flat out, he is wrong on that. It's easy when you have that kind of insulation from the decisions you make and how they affect people. It's easy to take that stance. But I haven't forgotten all the television footage I saw of police forcibly boarding up businesses. Small businesses, like down in Cincinnati, in fact, when all they wanted to do was run, be open the same way the large corporate operations were allowed to operate. It's to me, that's mind-boggling. The double standard. COVID-19, the pandemic, ended up being one of the largest wealth transfers in American history, because that's what happened. Every small business was told that they were unessential, but somehow Lowe's, Walmart, and all the big corporations out there, they were essential. Honda, we were locked out for almost 2 months. That's a lot of time without income, but yet they realized that keeping the second largest, you know, job maker in Ohio, you know, shut down for any length of time was not going to be good for them. So they opened us up. But like I said, this was a virus, though, that had 99.8% survivability, and they knew that early on. I mean, I'm sure Dr. Acton, if she were here right now, she would probably start, you know, trying to take me to task on that. But that was information that was actually asserted very early on, because there were a lot of people who there were universities, especially out in California, because they were at the front line of this just by virtue of being on the coast like they are, and they were doing the DNA test. They're doing the antibody test, on, you know, just random people. If they volunteered and they were on the roadside, they're swabbing people and they were looking at the results. And when they looked at the data from how many people had antibodies from COVID-19 but were never had any symptoms, when they crunched the numbers, survivability was 99.8%. There was no need to lock everyone down. Now, if they would have limited it to, say, nursing homes and like the James Cancer Center, where everyone's got a compromised immune system, that would have made sense. And just through all the licensing, that would have been fully within the governor's authority to do all that. But to make everyone locked down like, you know, like the plague was coming through was not necessary. They knew it, but they went pushed forward with it anyway for political reasons.
The guest this morning, Don Kissick. He is the Libertarian candidate for governor. We got to take a break. We're going to come back in 15 minutes. Another hour with Don this morning. Don't go anywhere.
She worked. Would come along and rearrange things. And my grandmother would stand to the side while she, with a drink in her hand,